Last week we studied about Daniel chapter 2 in the dream that God gave to the king of Babylon to show him the future of the world and the things that were going to happen. This week we're going to skip over several chapters of Daniel, which we will go back and study in their entirety, but they don't contain any prophecy. Chapters 2 through 6 are more or less historical data from Daniel's life in Babylon, the things that happened there. And we want to keep studying the prophecies because we want to keep them fresh in our minds so we understand them. I've entitled our sermon this week, Daniel, Roadmap to the End. How many of you, if I told you about a place maybe in Canada and what a wonderful place it was and that you should visit there, how many of you would just head off for there without a map to tell you how to get there? Wouldn't have any idea. I guess we could start driving north, but we might end up a long ways from our location. And I think it's the same way in the world today. We've all heard about heaven. The world all wants to go to heaven, and they believe that heaven is there, but most of the world is not studying their roadmap to get there. And the book of Daniel, I believe, is a major key to getting there. We talked last week about how Daniel is the only prophet that Jesus told us we needed to study and understand his predictions. And that's contained in Matthew chapter 24 there. We studied that last week, and we're not going to take the time today to go through it again. But Jesus told us that when we saw, he told the disciples, when they saw the abomination of desolation, that Daniel predicted that it was time to flee. And we know we're looking for that event to take place here at the end. Chapter 7 of Daniel is where we're going to begin today. Daniel chapter 7 and verse 1. It says, in the first year of Belshazzar, king of Babylon, Daniel had a dream and visions of his head upon his bed. Then he wrote the dream and told the sum of the matters. So it says, this was the first year of King Belshazzar's reign. Daniel had a dream. Remember, the dream in chapter 2 of the book of Daniel was given to the king, and then Daniel was given the interpretation of the dream. And that dealt with the political kingdoms of the world in Daniel chapter 2. But Daniel chapter 7 begins with the political, and then it shows us how the political was going to move into the spiritual arena and the spiritual applications that it would have. So this dream was given just to Daniel. He was given the dream upon his bed, and then he wrote it down. Daniel begins to tell us about the dream in verse 2. He says, Daniel spake and said, I saw in my vision by night, and behold, the four winds of the heaven strove upon the great sea. And four great beasts came up from the sea, diverse from one another. So Daniel had a vision. He saw the winds from heaven striving upon the great sea. And he saw these four great beasts come up out of the sea as he watched it. We've read in Revelation chapter 17 and verse 15, I believe it is, where the angel interprets what seas or waters are in prophecy, and he tells us that waters represent peoples. So this vision is representing these empires that would come up out of the earth. And you remember last week when we studied the statue that had the four different kinds of metal, there was four different kinds of metal, one for each empire. And in this dream, we're going to have four different beasts. In this dream, the beasts are going to represent the empires. God is teaching Daniel a little different lesson here. These prophecies, as we study them more and more, it's like a telescope. It can look way out into space and see a large area, and then as it begins to zoom in, it gets more and more detail, and that's how the book of Daniel is. It's going to give us more and more detail till it pinpoints the things that are going to happen here at the end. He tells us about the first beast beginning in verse 4. He says, the first was like a lion, and had eagle's wings. I beheld till the wings thereof were plucked, and it was lifted up from the earth, and made stand upon the feet as a man, and a man's heart was given to it. So now you remember in our vision Daniel had last week, the first empire of the earth was represented by the head of gold, and just like gold is the greatest metal, the most precious today, not the strongest, but the most precious, the lion is considered king of the beasts. So the first beast God chose to give in this vision to represent the kingdom of Babylon is a lion. And he said it had eagle's wings. The wings were a sign of speed and power. We're going to see that in more detail as we get farther down in the verses. But then Daniel says, I beheld till the wings thereof were plucked. Now if you had a lion and he had wings so he could really move with speed, but you took his wings away, what would that symbolize? It would be a decrease in power. He began to demise, lose something. So he says, I beheld till the wings thereof were plucked, and it was lifted up from the earth and made stand upon the feet as a man, and a man's heart was given to it. We have a saying today, we say, that person was lion-hearted. It means power and strength and bravery. So if you took a lion's heart away and gave him a man's heart, what would that be symbolizing? A loss of power, a loss of strength. And as the kingdom of Babylon came down to the end, a man's heart was ruling it. Now some people, as we begin to look at these, they think, you know, that is a far stretch to take this beast and apply it to a kingdom. And that's a mental block for some people. So what we want to do is skip down to verse 15 for a moment and read this, because Daniel saw this vision and then an angel came and told him what part of it meant. So let's read what the angel said in verse 15. It says, I, Daniel, was grieved in my spirit and in the midst of my body, and the visions of my head troubled me. I came near unto one of them that stood by and asked him the truth of all this. So he told me and made me know the interpretation of the things. These great beasts which are four kings or kingdoms, the words are used interchangeably in the Hebrew, four kingdoms which shall arise out of the earth, but the saints of the Most High shall take the kingdom and possess the kingdom forever, even forever and ever. So the angel told Daniel, he was in this vision. He said he went over to somebody who was standing nearby, and in his vision he spoke to this angel who was standing there in the vision, and he asked him what this meant. And Daniel was apparently satisfied with the answer, because he says he asked him the truth of it, and he told him the truth about it and made him know. And then the angel told him that these four beasts represent four kingdoms. Well, you see, this would have gone perfectly along with what Daniel already knew, because the vision, the last vision that he had interpreted, was the one for the king, and he knew that the four metals of the big image represented four kingdoms that were going to be on earth. And Daniel had told King Nebuchadnezzar that God said that that vision was sure and that it would come to pass. So when he has a vision here and the angel tells him these four beasts are going to represent four kingdoms that are going to come upon the earth, that's just building upon what Daniel had already gotten. He already knew there was going to be four kingdoms because he knew the four different metals in the image each represented a kingdom. Now God's showing him a beast and he tells him that these four beasts are going to represent four kingdoms on earth. So Daniel had no problem believing that, because that was prophecy building on top of prophecy that he already was familiar with. So we've already dealt with the lion in verse 4. In verse 5, he continues and he says, and another beast, a second like to a bear, and it raised up itself on one side, and it had three ribs in the mouth of it between the teeth of it, and they said thus unto it, arise, devour much flesh. So the second beast, it says, was like a bear. And it says that it raised up itself on one side. In other words, he saw this bear, and then one side of the bear stood up higher. Now, we haven't had a chance to study about it yet, but in the next chapter, I don't want us to get us confused, but next week we're going to study about chapter 8. And in the next chapter, God uses yet another animal to represent this second kingdom, and that is a ram. And he has two horns on his head, and as Daniel's watching, he sees that the one horn grows a lot taller than the other horn. So this bear came along, and the bear represents the kingdoms of Media and Persia. The Medes and the Persians are the ones who conquered the Babylonians. But after they conquered them, the Persians became stronger than the Medes, and so the bear symbolically raised up on one side. One half of him became stronger than the other. Said he had three ribs in the mouth of it, and that represents the three parts of the earth that they conquered. They conquered some north of the Mediterranean, they conquered down the area of Egypt, south of the Mediterranean, and on the east side of the Mediterranean, the Holy Land, and down through there, the three parts of the world, three governments that they took out and took over. So those are the three ribs that are in the mouth of it, and they were given power. They were told to arise and devour much flesh, and certainly a lot of people died in those wars and things that took place there. Now the third beast we begin to read about in verse 6, it says, "After this I beheld, and lo, another, like a leopard, which had upon the back of it four wings of a fowl. The beast had also four heads, and dominion was given to it." Now this is a very interesting beast. It says it's a leopard, and he has four heads, and he has four wings. Now Babylon conquered a lot of territory, and they were a powerful army. But the third empire on earth, as we trace it down through the history, we know were the Greeks, and their great conqueror was Alexander the Great. We've all heard of him. Alexander conquered the whole world, you could say, or the then known world, in just a few years' time. He made it all the way down into Egypt till he was knocking on the door of the countries below there. He made it way over to India, basically, and he had gone so far that his troops wouldn't go any further with him. He had so much territory, and he did this in just a few years' time, riding on a horse, if you can imagine that. And so they conquered a much larger area, and they did it much faster, and so this beast was represented as having four wings, in other words, speed in their conquering. Now what's very interesting to us is that it says the leopard had four heads. And if we track Alexander's kingdom, Alexander got his kingdom conquered, and he barely became king of this great region and was getting things done when Alexander died. And Alexander had four generals that had helped him conquer this whole area. And Alexander's four generals, rather than going to war themselves and one of them trying to take Alexander's place, they actually divided up the kingdom peacefully into four groups. And so those four generals represent these four heads on this leopard. Alexander barely had his kingdom, and then it was divided to his generals. So God really only deals with the generals in this. But in the next chapter, it's going to be interesting because we're going to study next week about a goat who had four horns come up out of his head, and it's representing this same kingdom. They're chronologically in order. It's very precise how God did this for us. And it takes a little bit to go through it, but after you read it a few times and think about it, you will understand it very clearly. Now as we continue on in verse 7, it says, "After this I saw in the night visions, and behold, a fourth beast, dreadful and terrible and strong exceedingly, and it had great iron teeth. It devoured and brake in pieces and stamped the residue with the feet of it. And it was diverse from all the beasts that were before it, and it had 10 horns. So these first four beasts have been animals that Daniel could easily recognize, and this fourth one, he doesn't really tell us exactly what it looked like. He says it was big. It was dreadful. It was strong exceedingly, and it had big iron teeth and iron claws, and it was just tearing up and destroying everything. And we know that the empire that took over after the Greeks was the empire of the Romans. And the Romans were called the Iron Monarchy. They did tear up the earth. They did reduce it to rubble behind them. And they conquered humongous territory, lots of space. So he described them as this great strong beast. And then he said that it had 10 horns on its head. Now you remember in our study last week, the big image, when it got to the bottom of the image, it had 10 toes. And Daniel told us that the kingdoms at the end would be divided. And so the big image had 10 toes at the end of the feet as it was getting to the end of its time. And this fourth beast, which represents the fourth kingdom, which is the same as the iron kingdom that we studied about last week that had the 10 toes, this one has 10 horns upon its head. So those are upon its head. So the 10 horns represent the divisions of the kingdom. Now verse 9 is very interesting. It says, "I beheld till the thrones were cast down, and the Ancient of Days did sit, whose garment was white as snow, and the hair of his head like the pure wool. His throne was like the fiery flame, and his wheels as burning fire. A fiery stream issued and came forth from before him. 1,000 thousands ministered unto him, and 10,000 times 10,000 stood before him. the judgment was set and the books were opened. Now there, after Daniel sees the fourth empire and this beast that represents it, he now sees a vision of God in heaven, the Father, seated upon his throne. It's like a fiery throne, and he sees millions and millions of people before him. It says, the judgment was set and the books were opened. So he sees that after this fourth empire, God is going to bring judgment upon the earth. Now I like to go back always and put this together with its text in Revelation. Keep your place in Daniel, but let's turn to Revelation chapter 20. Because Daniel saw these things, but we have two witnesses because John the Revelator confirms them for us also. And the Bible tells us in the Jewish law that you had to have two or more witnesses to confirm something. So God has given this for us in two different places. Revelation chapter 20 and verse 11. Revelation 20 and verse 11, John says, I saw a great white throne, and him that sat on it, from whose face the earth and the heaven fled away, and there was found no place for them. And I saw the dead, small and great, stand before God, and the books were opened, and another book was opened, which is the book of life. And the dead were judged out of those things which were written in the books, according to their works. And the sea gave up the dead which were in it, and death and hell, or the grave, delivered up the dead which were in them, and they were judged, every man according to their works. And death and hell were cast into the lake of fire. This is the second death. And whosoever was not found written in the book of life was cast into the lake of fire. So Daniel described for us that he saw till the thrones were set in place for the judgment, and the Ancient of Days sat on the throne, and millions of people were before him, and Daniel said the books were opened. And John the Revelator saw the very same thing in his day. He saw God the Father seated upon his throne. He saw everyone brought before him. In fact, he even goes into detail and he says he saw that all the dead that were in the ocean were brought up, and everybody out of their graves were brought in to be judged. So both of these prophets saw the very same thing, just at a different time frame. Daniel was seeing and looking forward. John was looking forward also. Now as we go back to Daniel chapter 7 and continue on there, Daniel chapter 7 and verse 11, Daniel says, I beheld then because of the voice of the great words which the horn spake, I beheld even till the beast was slain and his body destroyed and given to the burning flame. Because of these great blasphemous words that were being spoken, he says he saw the beast destroyed. Verse 12, he continues on and says, as concerning the rest of the beasts, they had their dominion taken away, yet their lives were prolonged for a season and time. Now this isn't talking about the first three beasts, it's talking about the other 10 horns that he's speaking about at this time. When he gets down to verse 13, Daniel says, I saw in the night visions, and behold, one like the Son of Man came with the clouds of heaven, and came to the Ancient of Days, and they brought him near before him. And there was given him dominion and glory and a kingdom, that all people, nations, and languages should serve him. His dominion is an everlasting dominion which shall not pass away, and his kingdom that which shall not be destroyed. Remember, Jesus' favorite term for himself was the Son of Man. And I think he called himself the Son of Man because he saw this in Daniel. He knew that he was this person, and he knew that eventually he would get the kingdom. And I don't think it was lost to the scribes and Pharisees either when Jesus called himself the Son of Man. They knew who he was claiming to be. I think they understood that. So Daniel says he saw one like the Son of Man, and Jesus was seated on a throne. And then he says he saw him brought near before the Ancient of Days. That's God the Father. So Daniel says he saw Jesus brought before the Father. And verse 14 says the Father gave him dominion, glory, a kingdom, that all people, nations, and languages should serve him. His dominion is an everlasting dominion which shall not pass away, and his kingdom that which shall not be destroyed. So John saw the very same thing. If we'll turn back to the Revelation now, to Revelation chapter 14 and verse 14. Revelation chapter 14 and verse 14. John the Revelator says, And I looked, and behold, a white cloud, And upon the cloud one sat like unto the Son of Man, having on his head a golden crown, and in his hand a sharp sickle. This is representing Jesus coming to harvest the earth. And it says he comes on a cloud. He's got a crown on his head. That means he's received that kingdom, the dominion and glory and power. And he has the sharp sickle in his hand, and he's preparing to reap the earth. So once again, we see that John the Revelator saw the very same thing that Daniel saw in his vision. Now, as we turn back to Daniel chapter 7, we're down to verse 15. Daniel chapter 7 and verse 15. We've already read this, but we want to read it again, keep it in context. Daniel 7:15. Daniel's getting ready to get the interpretation of this vision. 7:15. I, Daniel, was grieved in my spirit in the midst of my body, and the visions of my head troubled me. I came near unto one of them that stood by, and asked him the truth of all this. So he told me, and made me know the interpretation of the things. These great beasts which are four kings which shall arise out of the earth. But the saints of the Most High shall take the kingdom, and possess the kingdom forever, even forever and ever. That's us, brothers and sisters. We're going to take the kingdom at the end, and we're going to dwell under the reign of Jesus and the Father forever. Now, verse 19, once Daniel realized that this represented four kingdoms on earth, he understood all that, but what he really wanted to know was about this fourth beast. Verse 19, Daniel says, then I would know the truth of the fourth beast, which was diverse from all the others, exceeding dreadful, whose teeth were of iron and his nails of brass, which devoured and brake in pieces and stamped the residue with his feet. So Daniel said, after the angel told him about the four kingdoms, Daniel wanted to know about this fourth kingdom because it was unusual and it made him wonder what was going on with it. Verse 20, he tells us a little bit more about it. He says, and of the 10 horns that were in his head, and of the other which came up, and before whom 3 fell, even of that horn that had eyes and a mouth that spake very great things, whose look was more stout than his fellows. So Daniel says, I really wanted to know about that fourth beast and of those horns that were in his head. Now before we go on there, I want to go back and read verses 7 and 8 one more time, so we get the full impact of what he saw. Daniel 7 and verse 7, Daniel says, after this I saw in the night visions, and behold, a fourth beast, dreadful and terrible and strong exceedingly, and it had great iron teeth. It devoured and brake in pieces, and stamped the residue with the feet of it, and it was diverse from all the beasts that were before it, and it had 10 horns. I considered the horns, or I watched the horns, and behold, there came up among them another little horn, before whom were 3 of the first horns plucked up by the roots. And behold, in this horn were eyes like the eyes of a man, and a mouth speaking great things. And that's pretty amazing. Daniel says he watched these beasts, and he got down to the fourth beast, and the fourth beast had 10 horns upon his head. And then Daniel said he saw another little horn begin to come up amongst the 10 horns, and he says that this little horn pushed out 3 of the 10. In other words, it just pushed them out of the head, and they fell off the beast. And then this little horn grew up, and it says that he had eyes in the horn like the eyes of a man, and he had a mouth that began speaking great things. Now, the word great things there in the Hebrew means blasphemy against the Most High God. So this little horn, Daniel said, was coming up out of the midst of the 10. He destroyed 3 of the 10. And he began to speak great things against the God of heaven. That's what, and we know God didn't like this, and that's why it says in verse 11, we've already read it, but let's read it again. Verse 11, Daniel said, I beheld then because of the voice of the great words which the horn spake, I beheld even till the beast was slain, and his body destroyed and given to the burning flame. So that tells us that at the judgment, God has something for the little beast here, the little horn. He's going to destroy him because of the great words that he's spoken against God. So you can see why Daniel wanted to understand this vision. That'd be pretty interesting, wouldn't it? These visions God gave these men were magnificent. They were awe-inspiring. And Daniel had seen the 10 horns upon this beast's head. He saw the little one begin to come up. He saw the three pushed out and fall off the horn. He saw the little horn grow up into a much bigger horn than the others. And then he saw it had eyes like a man, and it began to speak terrible things against God. So Daniel wanted to know about that. And we just read over to verse 20 as he's telling us about this power. Let's read verse 20 again. Daniel said he wanted to know about, verse 20, and of the 10 horns that were in his head, and of the other which came up, and before whom 3 fell, there's the 3 that were pushed out, even of that horn that had eyes and a mouth that spake very great things, whose look was more stout than his fellows. The word stout means strong. So he says he wanted to know about this fourth, or this little horn that pushed out the 3 and somehow became stronger than the rest of those horns. Now before we go any further with this, we need to consider the Roman Empire, and we talked about it a little bit last week, how it was not conquered by another empire. Instead, 10 of the groups of people that lived in the Roman Empire, they called them the barbarian tribes, they actually broke up the Roman Empire into 10 countries, or 10 small regions that they ruled. One of those tribes was called the Anglo-Saxons, and they are with us today as the country of England. Another one of those tribes were called the Franks, and the Franks became the country of France. Another one of those tribes was called the Suevi, and they became the Portuguese. Another one of the tribes was the Visigoths, and they became the country of Spain. Another one of those tribes was called the Alemanni, and they became the country of Germany. And the 7th of those tribes still left today were called the Lombards, and they became the Italians. Now, there were 3 more. The Ostrogoths were a tribe, the Heruli were a tribe, and the Vandals were a tribe. Those were 3 more of the tribes that carved up the Roman Empire, but those tribes aren't here today. So according to Daniel's prophecy, there were going to be 10 tribes that would carve up the Roman Empire, and there were indeed 10 tribes that did it. Then he said another little power was going to come up in the midst of those 10 nations, and it was going to get rid of 3 of them. And what we find is that the power today that is the Roman Catholic Church came up right in the midst of the 10 nations of Europe that broke up the Roman Empire, that divided it. And they had some differences with 3 of those tribes. Some of their differences were the nature of Christ and his origin and things. And they were responsible for using the Roman powers to get rid of the Heruli, the Ostrogoths, and the Vandals. And those tribes, we can't say no one is alive on earth today who lived from them, because I'm sure they have descendants today, but there's no countries organized by those people. So truly, a little horn or a little power did come up out of the midst of those 10, and we see that he did take out 3 of them. You can get your Encyclopedia Britannica out this afternoon, and you can establish everything I'm telling you here right in that encyclopedia. Because this is true, it did happen, and it's very much overlooked today because it's unpopular to preach about it, but the Word of God is true, and it has to be given with its power. So we did have the countries of Rome divide into 10 groups. We did have a little horn come up out of the midst of those 10 groups that got rid of 3 of those 10 nations. And in verse 21, Daniel tells us a little bit more about it. Daniel says in verse 21, I beheld, and the same horn made war with the saints. Did the Roman Catholic Church make war with the saints? We know they did. They put God's people to death for at least 1,260 years. A lot of historians say they killed as many as 50 million people. They burned them to death. They used to take the heretics. There's many famous pictures of it. They have them in their cathedrals yet to this day. They used to take them out, chain them to a log out there, put a post in the ground, chain them to it, and stack firewood around them and light them on fire and stand there and watch them burn up. And they admit they did it. They say those people were heretics because they wouldn't do some of the things that the Catholic Church wanted them to do doctrinally. But the Bible says those were actually the saints of God because they were keeping his law and his commandments. And so this horn did make war with the saints. And for 1,260 years, they murdered God's saints. And honestly, they don't make a lot of apology for it today. They say they were heretics and they had got what they had coming. That's about the bottom line of it. this isn't an attack upon Catholic people. We know there's a lot of good people in the Catholic Church today, but the bottom line is that this power who rules that church is outlined in the Bible that it would come up at this time. Now, one thing that tells us that this can't be some power from the past is the fact that it tells us there in 21 they made war with the saints, and then it says they prevailed against them until the Ancient of Days came, and when judgment was given to the saints of the Most High, and the time came that the saints possessed the kingdom. So whatever power this was that was going to come up out of the midst of those 10 nations is going to have to go all the way to the time that Jesus comes back to this earth. And it says that they somehow prevail against God's saints in a way all the way to the end. And I tell you, the fact that there's only a few of us here today, and there are millions and millions of people out there in the Catholic Church today who are misled, shows the fact that doctrinally, and in numbers anyway, they're prevailing against God's people. And the Bible tells us that the day is coming that they're going to have physical power over God's people again. And they're working to get that because they don't like anyone talking about the past and the things that have happened. They want to silence that. Verse 23 continues on, and it says, "Thus he said," that's the angel talking to Daniel, "thus the angel said, the fourth beast shall be the fourth kingdom upon earth." So the angel told him the fourth beast is the fourth kingdom of Rome, "which shall be diverse or different from all kingdoms, and shall devour the whole earth, and shall tread it down and break it in pieces. And the 10 horns out of this kingdom are 10 kings or kingdoms that shall arise." So we just talked about it. Did 10 kingdoms arise out of Rome? Yes, they did. "And another shall rise after them, and he shall be diverse or different from the first, and he shall subdue 3 kings or kingdoms." So did another power arise out of the 10 and subdue 3 of those kingdoms? It certainly did. Historically, this has all happened. The Roman Catholic Church came up right in the midst of them. It says that somehow, we read it back in verse 20, they would become more stout than their fellows or stronger. And if you'll study throughout the last 400 or 500 years back there, the power that the Catholic Church had over the kings of Europe, they have amazing power over people's minds, because they claimed that they had the keys to heaven and hell, and that if you didn't do what they told you to do, they would keep you from getting into the kingdom of heaven. So they used this spiritual control to become stronger than the rest of the powers, and actually they had much power over those kings that were left, even Germany and those other countries. They did what the popes wanted them to do, so they were over them, and they had more power over them. Now verse 25 is the verse that is probably the most famous verse of this chapter, because it tells us about what this power was going to do. Verse 25, it says, "He shall speak great words or blasphemies against the Most High, shall wear out the saints of the Most High," he's done that, "and think to change times and laws." Now the word "think" there means intend to. The Roman Catholic Church intended to change times and laws. And we're going to talk about some more this week on Tuesday night, this very verse, so I encourage you to come. The Roman Catholic Church did change the times and the laws, because the pagans who entered the Roman Catholic Church and founded it really and took it over, they were all sun worshippers, and they worshipped the god Mithra, the sun as it passes overhead in the sky. They believed that the most powerful god lived on the sun, and they worshipped him. And so they took away the Sabbath of the fourth commandment that God commanded us to keep. They took that away, and they changed the time to Sunday. And the Catholic Church did this, and they put it in writing today. They say that's their mark of authority, that shows that they're greater than the Bible, that they have power over the Bible. And they put it in writing. You can read it. There's letters out there from them. So God told us that this was going to happen. He outlined this history down through Daniel, and he told Daniel that all these kingdoms were going to come. Out of the fourth kingdom, it was going to divide into the 10 nations of Europe. Out of those 10 nations, a power was going to grow strong right in the midst of them. This power was going to blaspheme God, because they were going to say that they could change his laws and do the things that they've done to him. And it says they would kill his saints, and we know they did that. It says that they would try to change the times and the laws. And one of the things we're going to be studying about is the fact that they didn't just change Sabbath to Sunday, they also took many other of the pagan feast days and brought them into the church. the fact that this next week Christianity will be divided between those who keep the Passover that God commanded to be kept forever and those who keep Easter comes down to the fact that the Catholic Church tried to do away with the Passover. And all these pagans who worship the sun in the spring, they worship the goddess of fertility. And her name was Ishtar. She comes all the way from ancient Babylon. It was a lady that they worshipped. And the goddess Ishtar was the goddess of fertility. And they believed in the spring that she had to give them the blessing of fertility so the ground would produce and all these things would happen. So they had this big feast in the spring, and on that day they sacrificed little babies, killed them, and they took their blood and caught it, and they dipped eggs in that blood. And that's where we actually got the dipping of the Easter egg that's with us today. It was the sign of fertility. They worshipped the rabbit. You ever wonder where the Easter rabbit came from? The Easter bunny? What he has to do with the resurrection of Jesus? Nothing. The pagans worshipped the rabbit because it has babies faster than about anything else. It's symbolic of reproduction. It used to be if people couldn't have a child, they would go see the pagan priest and he would take the rabbit's foot and they would keep it in their garments and that was supposed to be a good luck charm that would help them to have a baby. That's where we actually got the lucky rabbit's foot from. So all these things actually came in from paganism and God hates these things. They were developed by Satan and his false worshipers. And God spent a lot of time here in the prophecies to show us the fact that these things were going to happen. And some people say today, well, it doesn't really matter, you know, God will be happy either way. But God doesn't waste his time, and he didn't waste his prophets' time to give us all these prophecies if it didn't matter. If it didn't matter which day we kept, whether we observed the change in the time that they did, or we kept God's laws, if it didn't matter to him, he wouldn't have gone into the bother of telling us about this. Because this prophecy divides the world and it divides the churches. And the churches who are going to go along with the false times that the Catholic Church has changed. When we get back to the book of Revelation, John said in chapter 17 that he saw that the churches of the world were drunk with the false teachings of this spiritual Babylon power. The power that had changed God's times and his laws. And just like a drunk person doesn't know what they're doing, a lot of people today who keep Sunday, they don't realize that they're not really honoring the creator of the heavens, the father of Jesus. They're instead honoring the sun god that the pagans worshipped, which really comes back to Lucifer, the light bearer. And they don't realize that. But these things have been changed. And this power changed God's times and his laws. And they've instituted all of their false pagan holidays in place of God's. Every place you'll find God having a feast day, you'll find something that the pagans put one in its place. And so he told them all these things, and he told them that the saints, the end of verse 25, he told them they would be given into their hands until a dividing, until a time, times, and the dividing of time. And that represents 3.5 years. In the Bible it says a time represented a year. So a time is 1 year, times is 2 years. And a dividing of time would be a half a year. And so we've studied a little bit about the Hebrew calendar. They had 30 days in their month because they went with the moon cycle. So the Jewish year had 360 days in it. So a year in Jewish time would be 360. 2 Jewish years would be 720. If you add 720 and 360 together, you have 1,080. And then if you add a half a year, the dividing of time, it gives you another 180 days, which is 1,260 days. 1,080 plus 180 is 1,260. And we've already studied about in Bible prophecy a day equaling a year. So we have to look for a power that would have power over God's saints, that they would be given into his hand for 1,260 years. See, if it was just 1,260 days, that wouldn't be very long. The church has been persecuted for more than 3.5 literal years many times, but for 1,260 years, there couldn't be very many powers that could have done that. But if we go back and study history, we find that in 538 AD, the Catholic Church began to get that great power that they used to put the saints to death, and they had it for exactly 1,260 years. And in the year 1798, Napoleon marched his general Berthier into Rome and they handcuffed the Pope and they took him out of the Vatican and his power was broken to kill the saints. Exactly 1260 years after they gained that power. And the book of Revelation tells us, it picks up the theme of this beast and it tells us that he would have a deadly wound. One of his kings or one of his popes would be killed. but eventually that would be healed and everyone would wonder after him. People today don't even realize that. If you went out here on the street and told the average person, can you name the year that Napoleon took the Pope captive and handcuffed him and took him out of the Vatican, they would think it was some kind of a joke. They don't even know it ever occurred. But it did occur, and it tells us that this is the power. They changed God's laws. They came up out of the Fourth Kingdom. They got rid of 3 of the 10 nations of Europe. They changed the Sabbath to Sunday. They changed Passover to Easter and got rid of the rest of God's feast days that were to commemorate the work he was going to do here for our salvation. But we're given courage in verse 26 because it says, but the judgment shall sit, and they shall take away his dominion to consume and to destroy it unto the end. So the Pope has a lot of power today, and it says he's going to have more before the end, but it says the judgment's going to sit, and God is going to destroy them because they've corrupted his pure doctrine and his teachings, and they've taught men to keep their 10 commandments, which they altered rather than God's 10 commandments. Verse 27 says, and the kingdom and the dominion and the greatness of the kingdom under the whole heaven shall be given to the people of the saints of the Most High, whose kingdom is an everlasting kingdom, and all dominion shall serve and obey him. Hitherto is the end of the matter. As for me, Daniel, my cogitations much troubled me, and my countenance changed in me, but I kept the matter in my heart. See, Daniel didn't perfectly understand this vision, but he wrote down what he heard and what he saw. He had to write it down for you and I so we could look back on it and see this. Because you see, if you don't understand these prophecies and you don't understand the things God said was going to happen, then the difference between Saturday and Sunday doesn't seem like much of a difference. But the fact that God took all this time to give us these prophecies and to pinpoint all these events that were going to happen down through time, and then the fact that he told us this power was going to change his times and his laws. And a lot of people don't realize it, but the Catholic Church actually has a different set of Ten Commandments. If you'll go pull one of their catechisms out, you'll find that their Ten Commandments is different than the Ten Commandments contained in God's Bible. They've filled the churches with statues, so they eliminated the Ten Commandment that says, thou shalt not make unto thee any graven image. It's not contained in their works. They got rid of it because they couldn't have these people sitting in their church looking at all these statues up in front and then read them the verse that says you can't make a statue. People would have thought something was wrong. So they eliminated that commandment, but they knew they couldn't end up with just 9 commandments because if they went around telling people about the 9 commandments, somebody would know something was wrong. So they took the 10th commandment where God said that you shouldn't covet your neighbor's house or his wife or any of his possessions. And they took that commandment and cut it in two, and they said, we'll make one of those commandments, you don't covet your neighbor's wife, because that's so important, and we'll make the other commandment, thou shalt not covet his goods or his house or anything, and then we'll still have 10. So they did all that, and then they took the longest commandment, the 4th commandment that has to do with the Sabbath, and they reduced it to remember to keep the Lord's Day, so that they could change that day from Saturday to Sunday, and nobody would know about the change unless they read a real Bible and understood it. So this power did change God's 10 commandments. They did persecute his saints, and they've spoken great blasphemies against him. If you read some of their books, they perform the ceremony they call the Mass, and they claim when the priest does the Mass, he speaks these words over this little wafer and over some wine, and that they say in their books that Jesus at that moment has to come down from heaven and he dies again on the altar there, and that turns into his blood and his flesh. So they have Jesus at their command. They call him down whenever they want to. They actually say that their Mass is such a wonderful ceremony that the angels need to get things from God, and they come down and they have to gather around the table where the priest is doing the Mass, and when he does the Mass, God is so happy that then the angels at that time ask God for the things they need. And Jesus said to us that the little children's angels always behold the face of the Father, so that we know that the angels don't come down here to ask things at the Mass and get them from God. They're right up there with God. So they've truly blasphemed God and his name and his tabernacle and the host of heaven. They've done all of these things, and the only thing that's left for them to do is work with the governments of the earth as they're doing today. We see all the presidents going over there to meet them, and they're working very hard to bring about the mark of the beast here at the end and try to enforce their supremacy upon all people and make us keep their false, altered set of Ten Commandments. And you and I must not do that. We must continue to study the prophecies so that we can understand these things. Our closing hymn today is number 655, Give Me the Bible.